Hi guys.
Welcome back to the Unraveling the World podcast.
This week's episode, we are delighted to have Juanita Ingram as our special guest. Juanita, thank you for generously sharing your time with us today. So to kick things off, I was wondering if you could quickly introduce yourself.
Sure, I'm excited to be here. I'm Juanita Ingram. I'm an attorney, author, actress, TV producer, mom and wife. I live in Singapore currently. I'm originally from America, from Tennessee, Chattanooga to be exact. Prior to Singapore, I lived in London for 5 years and Taiwan for 2. And we have a show called The Expats International Ingrams. It's all about people of color living abroad and our experiences and journeys.
Oh, that's, I was wondering, could you talk a bit more about your show about the people abroad?
Yeah, so, you know, there's never been sort of an unscripted or reality show about people living abroad. I mean, you have international house hunters, but that's just finding a house. So mm-hmm. as story creator and as a producer, you always want to look for the story that hasn't been told. While I was living in London, I was an attorney. I had clients in the entertainment field, in the reality TV space, and I just saw a need for family-friendly content, particularly for Black people, people of color, Black and brown communities, that was authentic and that was a true depiction of life for us. And also, I lived abroad, and one day we used to do these things called Soul Food Sundays. It was kind of like a potluck, and all the Black people would get together in London. And one day we were celebrating this family that was going back to the U.S. Frankie Beverly and Maze and Beyonce was playing. We were running on the lawn, barbecuing. And I looked up and there was Windsor Castle in the background because that's where we were living at the time. And I just knew that that was a show. From my experience dealing in entertainment law and in reality TV, we don't really have a lot of diversity as it relates to how they treat Black-led casts in unscripted reality TV. It's the same narrative, same stories, and Black people are not monolithic. So we handle conflict differently, we live differently. There are 12 other Black families on the show, and I wanted to showcase their journey. We have everything from school teachers, we had military families this season. I had to get approval from the Pentagon, and I got it to showcase their journeys. And so it's a show about navigating change. We're in our second season. Season one came out in 2020. We were, you know, filming during the pandemic in Taiwan. Season two is our journey from Taiwan to Singapore. And you see all these other expats of color, Singaporeans, Taiwanese, people of different backgrounds, socioeconomic statuses. But how did they get to where they are? What is their life truly like? And of course, it chronicles my family as the leading sort of catalyst of bringing up from America to Taiwan and now Taiwan to Singapore, and also capturing my experience and my journey of becoming Mrs. Universe as well. So it is a full circle, very family friendly. There's no profanity, there's no fighting. We don't shy away from conflict, but again, Black people are not monolithic, so we deal with conflict in different ways. And we sit down and we have conversations about it and we deal with it. We deal with very hard issues from colorism to racism, a lot of different things that are occurring in our lives in living abroad. So that is the show.
So you mentioned a lot of different careers that you've done, so like reality TV, and then you're also an attorney. So I was wondering what inspired you to enter the world of pageantry, because that was also another one of your careers.
Yes, this is actually my 15th year in pageantry. I started in Mrs. So a lot of people don't know that there are three different divisions. There's teen, there's Miss, M-I-S-S, and then there's Mrs. for married women. And I entered into the Mrs. division 15 years ago. As an attorney, I was already a lawyer. And as a lawyer, I had all these opportunities to speak to young girls, to go to elementary schools and high schools. And I remember coming back to my office one day, someone had asked me, I was living in Indianapolis, and someone had asked me to come and speak to this elementary school. It was all majority Black school, and to come speak to their young girls about career choices and making the right decision. And I went back to my office. I was like, God, this is amazing. It's wonderful. How can I do more of this? And I made that infamous statement, use me, God. And then you got to be careful what you pray for, careful what you ask for. And I heard in my spirit, pageantry. And I was like, nope, I'm not doing that. At the time, I didn't really know much about pageants, to be honest. I watched pageants as growing up. I didn't see a lot of women of color. So I remember, I think it was 1984, was the first year that Vanessa Williams won Miss America. And I just didn't see a lot of us. So I was like, no, I don't really want to do that. And at the time I was a lawyer, I was also an adjunct professor at Butler University for business law. And I'm like, I'm in academia, you know, I'm not doing that. But then God took me to the book of Esther, which is technically the first historic account of pageantry that we have. Esther went up with the other young ladies in the county before a panel, and the king gave her a crown. She became a queen, and it was the first Miss Persia pageant, if you will. But it was done with purpose, and I studied that book and found that, okay, well, pageantry with purpose can be very powerful. So I entered my first pageant, which was Mrs. Indiana USA in 2007. And I didn't think that I was going to win when I walked into the room, because there were women there that had been doing pageants their entire lives, but I did. And I kept going from there. And then when we moved abroad, I started competing internationally. And it's just really a catalyst. I think the difference in the Mrs. genre versus Miss and teen, you get a lot in terms of, now there are great prize packages, don't get me wrong. There's money involved. There's agents and representation and all of that. But when you're in the Mrs. genre, it's more of a focus on what you can give back to the world. You're at a place in your career where you probably are pretty settled. You're not really looking for scholarship money or things like that, like the Miss contestants are. And my charity of choice and my focus is Dress for Success. We help unemployed women get back into the workplace by giving them interview attire and interview training. I've been made downsized or made redundant, as they say in the UK. I've lost my job. I've had to look for another job. It's very much a passion of mine. So my focus during my reign, it's always been that. And then this past year, I had the opportunity to represent Singapore at the Mrs. Universe competition with the World International System. And I won, and I became the first Black woman to ever win the title of Mrs. Universe. So that's sort of the 15-year journey of pageantry, if you will, but it's always been more so with a focus on giving back and serving as a role model. And I just told myself, if not me, then who? And if not now, when? So I stepped out, and who doesn't like the ability to focus on yourself and get in shape and get fit and then have a lot of fun as well? So that's why I do it.
You know, that's amazing. Like, and now you mentioned that, right? So how exactly did it feel to be crowned the first Black American as Mrs. Universe?
It was surreal. You'll see in the video, if you look at it, when they call my name, I mouth, oh my God, that's me. Now, I don't know why I was so shocked when there was only two of us left standing. It was me and Mrs. Japan. And I knew one of us was going to win, but it just gets very surreal when they start counting down, you know, fourth runner-up, third runner-up, and you're still left standing. My journey for Mrs. Universe in particular was like a 10-year journey. I went 10 years prior, and Mrs. Universe was owned by a different system. And it was a system out of Russia, and it was a different experience. And I actually started filming another documentary called Beyond Beauty during that time, just because, again, the story that hasn't been told. Most people don't know anything about Mrs. pageants and the Mrs. genre. Even during my reign, the entire year, most people said, oh my gosh, I didn't know that there was a Mrs. Universe or a Mrs. America or a Mrs. World. They don't know anything about that entire genre. It was very surreal. At the time when you're competing, you just want to do your absolute best. I think I knew 10 years ago that a Black woman had never been crowned. I didn't know, out of all the owners of the title, I didn't know at the time that that was still true. I just had a mission and a purpose for myself. But it is a heavy mantle that I willingly accept to be the first, because again, someone has to do it. I think it's very important for our young girls to know. I mean, we see it with The Little Mermaid, we see it with Barbie movies, the importance of us having our own sense of validation. And just as important as it is that we have a Black Little Mermaid, it is as important that you have a Black Mrs. Universe. When I walk into middle schools, one of my very first appearances was in a middle school in Long Island, and these little girls were in there, and I walked in and they were all screaming, but this little Black girl looked up at me and she said, "Oh my God, you look like me." And so for a lot of people, they question, what is pageantry irrelevant now? Is sort of misogynistic? Is it still relevant? I think it's a very privileged lens that people can look through to say pageantry isn't relevant, or it doesn't matter that there's a Black Mrs. Universe, because when you've had a European standard of beauty pushed forth and the narrative pushed forth and that imagery pushed forth for centuries, for decades, it may be irrelevant to some groups, but it's very much still relevant for that little girl that looked up at me, or for the little girls that grab, you know, Hallie and grab her and hold her because they see someone that looks like them. So it's still relevant to our community, to our youth, to see that their beauty matters. And then also to have the narrative that I am a lawyer and, you know, I've practiced law for quite some time. Character is beautiful. Wisdom is beautiful. Intelligence is beautiful. And we need that narrative as well.
Yeah. And I know that you kind of touched on this, like, you talked a lot about, like, your journey becoming the first, you know, like, Black woman becoming Mrs. Universe, and you also inspired a lot of young girls who look like you along the way. So I wanted to ask you, like, every journey isn't probably, like, perfect, or every journey isn't probably, like, the smoothest. So what are some of the most important lessons you've learned during your career? So, and this can include, like, setbacks that you're able to overcome, or just important lessons that you think people should know along the way.
Absolutely. Twofold. I think one, to never give up. Again, my journey to the crown was a 10-year journey. It wasn't smooth. I went 10 years prior to me winning. It was owned by a different group of people. It was a totally different system. And it was Universe Limited is their organization. And it was limited. It was interesting. That year they had the e-vote category, so people could vote online. So it was a public choice. And normally in pageantry, when you have people's choice, that person is placed in the top 15 because it's the people that chose that person. And that year, and I still have the footage because I'm working on a documentary right now called Beyond Beauty. And in that footage, you'll see the call out, 1.4 million people voted. And this year's People's Choice winner is United Kingdom. And at the time, that's what the country I represented, that's where I lived. And so I won. And I still have my sash as e-vote winner. And then they didn't even call me to top 15. So I didn't make it. And I didn't win. And I stood there and it was kind of devastating. But I stepped away. And it's okay in life sometimes, even with a goal and a dream that you have and something that you know you're called to do, it's okay to take a pause. It's okay as long as you don't give up. I started doing other things, obviously, you know, film. I started back acting. I really started focusing on myself and other things and other dreams and aspirations, never really letting go of that dream, but just recognizing that it wasn't my season. Understand that everything happens for a reason. Sometimes when you feel that rejection, that denial, you think that it's over, or you think that that means, oh, you should give up. Really, sometimes it's just a pause or a redirection. Had I won that year under that different ownership, I would have had a completely different year. I would have had a different experience. Of course, my children were 10 years younger at the time. They were 3 and 5. We were living in London. It was a different time in my life. This year, 10 years later, fast forward, it's owned by a different system. I had a wonderful director, a wonderful experience, super supportive. I'm at a different place in my life. And I won at a time that I feel like it's more critical for us as a society. My presence is much more needed at this time. And it was a better time for me. And it was a better system, better owners. I had a much better experience under this ownership. Yet I focused on other things in the interim. I didn't give up. So one, never give up. And also recognizing that, you know, sometimes in life, you go through different seasons where things may appear one way, or they may appear to be a setback, but it's not. And you have to recognize that things happen in the right season. You are always in the right place at the right time. You're never in a place where you're actually missing out. That just doesn't happen. Whether you believe in God or not, or the universe, it doesn't happen that way. You are always in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, like, I really admire, like, all of the things that you preach for. And I also know that you wrote a book. So I was wondering what inspired you to get into book writing, and if it was, like, the lessons that you learned along the way, and that you thought that you should be able to share, like, what you learned in a form of writing. Was that what inspired you to start writing books and share your interests and your journey to the world?
Absolutely. You know, I think a lot of young ladies ask me to mentor them. They want me to counsel them. I think that's part of being a lawyer, is that I just have a proclivity of helping people, because that's what lawyers do. We just solve problems. And I wanted to mentor everybody that asked me, but I couldn't. And so, because I'm only one person, and I have a husband and a kids and a career and all these other things, but I really wanted to. And so my latest book, or my last book, I actually have two more books that are coming out, but my last book, Fabulous, Faithful, and Free, really is me pouring out everything that I had. If I had opportunity to mentor everyone that asked me to, it's a transformation book. And it's everything that I would pour out, everything, every tip, every experience that I would give. It's about loving yourself, living your life with boldness, all the advice that people would seek from me to give. I try to pour out into this one book. Now, life, of course, that was 4 or 5 years ago now, and I have more to give. So I have a new book that's coming out, Heavy is the Head, that wears the crown, and it's all about female leadership and the experiences that I've had through that journey of leading abroad and leading with Dress for Success in London and in America, and having those various experiences, having my own production company. So it's all about female leadership. But I wrote the books because I wanted to share some of the ups, the downs, and how I navigated through the change. I also have a book coming out, because I just did a TED Talk about navigating change and living abroad. And so Mind the Gap is what it's called. And the gap is really about the gaps that come up in life sometimes when you move outside of your comfort zone and you restart your life in a different setting. And it doesn't have to be that you're living abroad. It's really any change that you're navigating through in life. And these principles that I lived through, my first experience sort of uprooting myself from my comfort zone was a lot. And as a lawyer, moving to London and not being able to practice law in the traditional way and having to truly seek out and find purpose and a deeper meaning, and who was I really, giving myself permission to be a multi-hyphenate in a world that will call you flighty or a number of different things, unfocused, all over the place. If you do a multitude of different things, this is before being multi-hyphenate was really a trend. But giving yourself permission to be all that you are. And just three tips on how to navigate that area of change. So those two books are coming out. But I started writing because I had a message to share and I wanted to get it out to as many people as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure that doing all of this takes a lot of time. So I was also curious as to how you manage your time as an attorney, author, and actress.
Yeah, I'm all about, I don't believe in work-life balance. I think that phrase is actually really dangerous and toxic, because it connotes, balance connotes that everything is equal, that you're trying to make everything get an equal share of you. And that's not practical and it's not real. And nothing will ever be more important than my family, than my children, than my own mental health, myself. And so I don't believe in work-life balance. I do believe in prioritization. And I like to prioritize is what I walk people through in the book. So Fabulous, Faithful, and Free comes with a workbook also. And it's what I walk women through in terms of what are your priorities. Sometimes in life, we're going so fast and opportunities are coming to us that we haven't really counted up the cost of the opportunity beforehand. I like to count up the cost beforehand. So before I became Mrs. Universe, I already had my boundaries in place. I already had my priorities in place of what is important to me. So that way I would know, okay, this opportunity is here, but my daughter has a soccer game. I'm going to say no because my priorities are aligned. And it helps you to know and to not feel regret. It helps you to feel and to understand what you're doing and what you're saying yes to and what you're saying no to. So set your priorities before the opportunity comes. Understand what's important to you. If making money is important to you, there's nothing wrong with that. Especially as women, sometimes we don't give ourselves permission to say, I want to make money and a lot of it. What are your priorities in making the money? For me as a public speaker, I have to set a limit now because everyone wants me to come and speak, but not everybody has a budget. And I love everybody. But that isn't going to work for me now because I understand my value and my worth. And it's okay to say, this is my boundary. This is my financial boundary. This is what I require. So you set those priorities before you start on the undertaking, before you start on the journey. And then you're able to shape your life, your experiences, your career in a way that works for you, in a way that's healthy.
So how do you find the inspiration and motivation to excel in such diverse fields? And do they influence each other in any way?
Yes, you know, the best thing that I did, and I talk about this in my TED Talk, and I talk about it in my book, Minding the Gap. And the GAP is a mnemonic. I won't give the whole thing away so people don't have to buy the book. But part of the A is asking for advice and having advisors. And the best thing that I did when I moved to London was get a life coach. And then she challenged me. I was having a hard time as an attorney thinking of myself in a non-traditional way. What am I going to do? Who are my role models? Who am I looking to? And she challenged me to research all of the attorneys that were doing other things with their careers. And they became my inspiration. Everyone from Michelle Obama, who is a lawyer, who prior to becoming the first lady was working in the nonprofit field as a nonprofit executive. I looked at Clive Davis, who is the CEO and president of Jive Records, who discovered Whitney Houston, Harvard attorney, you know, doesn't miss a day in the courtroom. I looked to Iyanla Van Zandt, who is a New York prosecutor. She's a lawyer, but she's also a spiritual coach. She coaches people throughout life. So I looked at people who were doing things that I wanted to do. Actors. I watched the movie 300, Gerard Butler, who is the lead actor in the movie, you know, the movie about Spartans and 300, and the lead actor is a lawyer. And so I looked at all of these people and got inspired to take the lid off of the box that people had tried to place me in. People will place you in a box. Sometimes you'll put the lid on. You have to give yourself permission to pop the lid off that box and step out. And sometimes looking at other people that have done what you want to do is part of the inspiration. Vanessa Williams is a huge inspiration to me. I had the privilege of being on a Christmas special for Dress for Success with her. And she's an inspiration for me as a Black woman who, yes, made history in pageants, but went on to do greater things in her career. So not being limited to just that one dimension. And everyone from Gandhi to Nelson Mandela were all lawyers that did other things with their careers and went on to do great things to inspire other people. And sometimes your dreams and desires are so big that they can seem surreal. They could seem unattainable, but you have to look to big figures and get inspired and stay motivated and to know that at one point in time, they weren't who they were, but they became what they are. And so can you.
Yeah. You know, I'm really happy that you were able to meet people that you look up to and work with such professionals in diverse fields. And I'm also aware that you were able to travel to different places and you lived in different places like London, Taiwan, and Singapore. So I was wondering if global exposure in any way had some kind of difference in the way you worked or had some influence in diversity and inclusion or the way that you think.
Oh, absolutely. I definitely think the 12 years that I've lived abroad now has definitely shaped my worldview. It shapes you in your ability to understand cultures. Traveling certainly helps, but living abroad is a different level of immersion and cultural awareness and cultural competency. It certainly shapes your ability to understand that the world is bigger than where you are, but that you are a part of the world no matter where you are. It's interesting. I was talking to these fashion designers just the other night at this reception here in Singapore with an organization that brought together this diverse group of fashion designers. And they were talking about how they lived all over the world and how sometimes you feel too foreign to feel a part of where you are, but not local enough to ever feel accepted. But yet you come into this place where you understand that you are a part of everywhere that you are. And you're able to assimilate, you're able to morph in a very healthy way of understanding the world around you and how similar we all are in our walks and our journeys. Yet those differences that we have are also extremely important. It's important to see it. It's important to immerse yourself. It changed my view. You know, there's a idea or a phraseology of the power of inclusion. And sometimes I am at a place now where I question that. I question who we are giving the power to and why we're asking to be included in places that don't want us there. And instead of asking, where do I want to be included? When you live in other places and you see the beauty of other environments, you start to recognize your own value and your own worth within this world. And that it is a beautiful thing and a privilege for you to meet other people and for them to meet you as well. And so you take that power back and start asking yourself, where do I want to be? Where do I want to be included? And what is the most valuable, healthy place for me to exist?
You know, it's really clear that you're an advocate for a lot of women and a lot of young girls. So as a final question, I was wondering, what advice would you give to young girls who are aspiring to be a lawyer or aspiring to be an attorney or aspiring to enter the world of pageantry? What sort of advice would you give them, you know, not only to get into these kind of jobs or these types of fields, but also to make a positive impact in their communities and beyond?
Absolutely. First and foremost, know that you are enough. You are enough just as you are, just where you are. We are all evolving. We're all growing. I wasn't who I am 10 years ago or 15 years ago. You are a constant evolution, and that is a good thing. The only things that are not growing are things that are dead. Trees grow, flowers grow. You will grow as well. Don't rush the growth process. None of us wakes up and we just arrive at this place. When you're looking at me, you're looking at a snapshot of a culmination of 15 years in pageantry. I've been a lawyer for 21 years. Sometimes we look at social media and we look at the highlight reels of someone's life, but also the culmination of a highlight reel of someone's life. Don't rush the process. Know that you are perfect right where you are. Continue to grow and continue to be your authentic self. Don't allow anyone to put a label or a limit on what you can do. And it's okay to change. It's okay to pivot. It's okay for you for 5 years to do one thing and to say, you know what, either this isn't fulfilling me or I think I'm called to do more. And no matter if you are the first to do it, if you're the first in your family or the first in the world, in my case, to do something, it is okay for you to pursue it. The number of people that questioned me along my journey, I got the questions of, so since when did you start writing books? Since when did you start acting? Since when did you start doing pageantry? Since I started, since I decided. And sometimes people meet you at a place in life where they don't really know you. They think they know you, but only you know you. And it is okay for you to get to know you in depth. And for you have to give yourself permission first to be all that you want to be. And then the rest of the world will catch on. And if they don't, you'll arrive at a place where you don't care anymore. When I went back to acting and producing, people thought, oh my gosh, since when did you do that? Well, actually, I started when I was 9 years old. My first performance at a theater, Tivoli Theater in Chattanooga, was when I was 9. But people who met me in college didn't know that. But I don't need their permission to be all of me. So I think that's the fundamental, if we can get that as young women, to know that you validation is for parking. The only thing that you need to validate yourself. Do it for yourself. Then everyone else will catch on. If they don't, you won't care. But I think the biggest thing is to live life with no regret. On your deathbed, when you look back, what are you going to say, I wish I could have done? Because we only get one life. You don't have to rush through life, but you do want to live it to the fullest and to live life where you could never say, oh, I wish I would have, if I had only pursued, if I'd only been brave enough to really follow. And if you fail, it's not a failure. It's just a redirection. And it's just an area of learning. But that experience is important. Had I not done Mrs. Universe 10 years ago and not made it, I wouldn't have had the idea to continue to do it and then ultimately becoming Mrs. Universe 10 years later. And every dream doesn't take 10 years, but some do. Some takes a year, some takes 6 months. It just depends. But don't give up. Validate yourself. Give yourself permission and know that you're enough.
Those words are absolutely beautiful. And I just want to quickly mention how what you just said about when you're on your deathbed, that really stood out to me, because I literally realized, my mom said this to me a few years ago, when you're on your deathbed, you're gonna regret all those things that you think you could have done, but you know, you just never did it. And your words really, really resonate with me. I just want to let you know that that will stick with me forever.
I am so glad. You know, I try to be the mother of the world. I think motherhood is such a blessing. It changes your lens and your focus on things, because you recognize the importance of life, but also how finite it is. It's infinite in possibility, but finite in time. And regret, I think, is the biggest thing that we could possibly live with. You do your absolute best to live up to your potential, not anybody else's, but yours. That takes a journey of self-exploration and giving yourself permission to be still and be quiet and just think about what's important to me. What do I want to do this season, this month, next 12 months, next 12 hours? And just sitting sometimes, a workbook that I have, ask certain questions and certain probing questions that sometimes as women, we never stop long enough to ask ourselves, because we're inherently nurturers and givers, and we pour out into everybody. Sometimes that time to pour out into yourself is the most critical that you can take. So thank you so much for saying that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, seriously, like, this entire conversation has been really meaningful to the both of us, and especially me. Like, I've taken a lot from this, and definitely things to remember for the future. We loved having you on here. We loved your advice. We loved hearing your story. And we wish you the best for your future and your career.
Thank you so much.
The best. You definitely have amazing things going on for you. And yeah, just keep doing what you do, please.
I absolutely will. And I appreciate all of your support and your kind words and for having me on. And for those who are listening, if they want to watch the show, because my production company is a nonprofit, proceeds from the show are going back to our community to Dress for Success, to help women get back into the workplace. And they can stream it on Amazon Prime. They can also stream it on Tubi. And the more you stream, the more we make, and the proceeds go to help other women. So it's called the Expats International Ingrams. And we have 2 seasons. So please feel free to stream away.
Absolutely, yeah. Give it a stream. We will definitely give it a watch when we can.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Of course.
Yeah. Adding on awesome. To Melvina, thank you so much, Juanita, for taking your time to join us today. You know, we learned a lot, and we also hope that our listeners will learn from your valuable insights. And we just appreciate your time and your expertise, you know, taking, you know, definitely out of your busy schedule to be here with us today. And we hope that you found this conversation as enlightening as we did. So yeah, just to sum up this video, thank you so much for being with us today. And I think that concludes our episode.
Yeah, have an amazing day.
Thank you, you too. And thank you for creating this platform. Thanks.
Of course.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.